Welcome to the Highbury Squad. You can follow us on Twitter at Highbury Squad. In fact, it's the same on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and eventually iTunes. Join me, Sophie, aka at Soccer Diva, Amanda, aka at GoonaGirl 1969, and our very special guest, Super Kev, Super Kevin Campbell. It's just like being down the pub with your mates.
Welcome to another episode of the Highbury Squad. Today we are ecstatic because not only is the entire squad reunited after a couple of difficult weeks for the Guna Nation, welcome back Amanda and Super Kevin Campbell. Hello gang, how's it going?
Hi Sophie.
All right, sister. You doing all right?
I'm doing all right, sis. Doing all right. I'm going to be doing all right even more because our guest today, he grew up in southeast of London. At a young age, he was a talented boxer and footballer. He also showed a deft touch as an aspiring entrepreneur. But after a chance encounter with his now talent manager, this London lad turned his attention to the small and big screen. From the iconic Football Factory, The Business and Layer Cake, to big Hollywood productions like Game of Thrones, Batman, and Clash of the Titans, this versatile actor, writer, director, and producer is without doubt a lovable national treasure. He does so much for charity too, and we will talk about that a little bit later. Welcome to the Highbury Squad, Chelsea fan, whoopsie daisy, Mr. Tamer Hassan.
Woo! What's happening, everyone? Listen, that was a beautiful introduction. I've never had one of them before. So thanks, Sophie. But three things you got wrong.
Oh, shit. Right? Here we go.
First one. You said I used to be a good boxer. I'm still a good boxer. Second one, I'm a Millwall supporter, not a Chelsea supporter.
No.
See, I knew it.
No way. That's not what it says.
That's not what it says, Tam.
Hang on. But if it's on the bio, I mean, everybody knows I'm a Millwall supporter.
Millwall fan. I know it.
You're a Millwall.
Millwall. See, that's from the fucking that's from the Spanish that works, isn't it? But I do go to the Chelsea, so you work there. A lot of my mates. I'm predominantly a Millwall supporter.
Why'd you go over Chelsea then?
It's just around the corner, isn't it? I mean, it's a Premiership. It's a Premiership. And plus, the birds are good looking, man. They're better than down at the pen, you know what I mean? I'm going to get so annihilated here, isn't I?
Yeah, you
I'm
will now.
Yeah. Lioness is your beautiful.
Oh, my God. Right. Well, I have no Millwall questions ready because
the third one was I'm not a film director.
I thought you directed the new one that you were out there in Berlin for.
Everything but that.
Well, it's about time you directed. It's about time you directed.
I know
a
lot of people do say that, but I like to go home after work. Directors don't sleep.
So basically, Highbury Squad, my entire intro was utter shite, right?
That sounded good though. It was well rehearsed. I loved it.
I thought it was very nice,
Thanks, mate.
Your speech patterns were beautiful. You had a nice straight line through it. It's very direct.
Listen,
I think you got it wrong.
Soph, next time, just go, welcome Millwall fan, Mr. Hassan.
I know the truth. I know that
would have been right then, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I was just auditioning.
These three have got the hump. Campbell, you got the hump as well.
Listen, I'm... keep quiet and let them go, mate.
Kevin tries to keep us under control, but it doesn't really work.
It never works.
Oh, okay.
Any man who says he's the boss in his ass, I'll say your line moves are more simple.
Right then, let's get stuck in. Let's see how bad my research has been for this particular episode. Before we get stuck into a little bit of Chelsea and Millwall. I wanted to touch on your early life a little bit.
I want to know how you chose your football team then.
I didn't really choose it, to be honest. First and foremost, it does infuriate me when you've got, some clubs in London and people sort of try and support the teams around the rest of the country. That really annoys me. I mean, sometimes people say, oh, because my dad supported them, or because whatever, so then I kind of get it. But me, I grew up in the old. I'm a New Cross boy through and through. And we just, I mean, it was just the right thing to do. our local club, we supported. I remember we were so poor when we could just go up onto Dubois Hill and watch it from there. And years ago, they used to open the gates at half time and let us in. But it wasn't really a choice. It was just all the boys and everyone around the manor supported the team. So it was kind of installed in me from an early age.
Yeah.
You know.
Tama, you were a boxer growing up. Obviously, tough.
I was, yeah.
Tough sport to be in. Did you run into any now famous boxers back then or any legends when you were coming up?
They're all a lot younger than me. And the thing is, when we was fighting, I was undefeated as an amateur, but when we was fighting young, I mean, I did spar with Eubanks. We've had a chat about it before, but none of us can quite remember. But I just said to him, there's no one with a nose like yours in the world, so it must have been you, Chris.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't have it. But it was around about Chris, but there was a lot of up-and-coming prospects at the time that kind of made it but didn't make it that I did spar with and move around with.
But brilliant.
Tam, yeah. let me ask you this, because you were talented at sports. You had a lot of things going for you, but then you kind of stumbled into, because I know Amanda's chomping at the bit to ask you a question about one of your most iconic movies. But before we get to that, I just want you to tell the audience and people who are listening who love your work, especially football fans, how did you go from the boxing to the business stuff when you were younger? And then all of a sudden you find yourself in the film industry, in the TV industry. How did that happen?
Where do you want me to start? It's a bit of a long one, this one. You've got plenty of time.
Give me the elevator version. No, yeah, go on.
The boxing side of things, when we was growing up, I think, you know, I was born in 1968. And when we was growing up, there wasn't a lot of foreigners here. And the foreigners that were here were kind of, I'm not one to complain about, you know, growing up in the flats. So I love all of that. Whatever happened to me through my life is who I am today. But the boxing side of things was more for protection, because I'm big and I'm strapping and I'm tall and everything else now, but as a kid I was like a little short fat jerk with loads of hair, you know what I mean? Sort of swimming around. But I had plenty of heart and I had plenty of arsehole, pardon my French. But so it was, I kept fighting at school and my mum tried to stop me from fighting, so she tried to, you know, channel my aggression into something else. Because as a kid growing up in that sort of society, you just want to be accepted, you know what I mean? And
yeah. There's
a funny story I've got with the racism thing, and you probably understand this. So we're growing up here and you're kind of getting, you can't fit in here. And then also, I've got like 8, 9 years old, and I thought, we're going to Cyprus, to the motherland where I'm from.
Yes.
And I thought, hopefully I'm going to be accepted here. But the perception our Cypriot people have, anyone who lives in London is a multimillionaire. Right? That was back in the day. Right? And then I got to the village and I thought, yes, I'm here, I'm home, I'm at the motherland. They called me an English bastard and beat me up over there as well. So I thought, that was the time when I thought, there's no such thing as racism, man. Kids are just horrible and evil and it's just what people do, do you know what I mean? But so anyway, going back to that, my mum said, look, you know, go to judo. I tried judo. I rose in the ranks at judo. I found it easy quite quickly, but judo didn't help you defend yourself. I got really bored of that. And then my mum put me into boxing at 9 years old. And then once you start boxing, when I was growing up, the only thing was to get respected. Either you was a bank robber or a boxer or something like that. But as soon as people were in their minds thought, you know, he's a boxer. And then I had my first fight, second fight, and I just kept winning. And people just started leaving me alone.
Mm.
And that was kind of where I went into the boxing thing. But
yeah,
as a kid, work-wise, entrepreneurial-wise and business-wise, I could not take an order. And my mum knew that from day one. And she used to be a seamstress and machinist. And I always helped her. And I was always working. I remember like working as a kid doing paper rounds and stacking shelves at Londis. I just was always working, but I just couldn't take an order. I was getting in trouble at school and blah, blah, blah. So my mum, from an early age, this kid's got to have his own business. But thank fuck there ain't national service here. Otherwise, I would have been court-martialed and shot. So she set me up. Pocket store. My mum used to make dresses for Selfridges and that. She was a really, really great machinist, seamstress. And she set up her own little business and she was doing work for Selfridges. And back in the day, Selfridges had, she was making dresses and they were like 50 quid. My mum would get them for a fiver. You see what I'm saying? And we ended up setting up a stall in the East Lane Market. And that was when I first started in business. And I kind of went from there just into business. Sports, I've always loved sports, and I've always been one of these people where I don't do things half-heartedly. You know what I mean? If I'm going to do so, I'll concentrate on that. I'll conquer it. I'll win it. I'll beat it. And then move on to the next thing. I don't sort of juggle a million things at once. So, but with the acting, I kind of fell into it because, my manager and agent, I'm kind of still with, but she's now my producer. Someone introduced me to her and she said, I didn't even know I was going on for that to me about acting because I had nightclubs and restaurants and I was doing okay. And, she said, I've never thought about acting. I think the first quote I said, which I'm going to live to regret for the rest of my life, is acting for months. and I keep getting in front of it and walked out the restaurant. And it was at Bentley's. I remember it was at Bentley's in the West End. And she said, he's a flash playboy wannabe gangster. But I love him and I think he's got talent. And then cut a long story short. They brought me in, they screen tested, and I went up for EastEnders, non-speaking role, Phil Mitchell shooting, blah, blah, blah. Everyone on their mum wanted it, went in and got the job. I won't go into why, but I went in and got the job. And then it kind of rollercoastered from there, and I was on set. They picked me up in a car, put me on set, dressed me, clothed me, fed me. I delivered a performance, which was very enjoyable, took me back home. And at the end of it, they gave me a check.
Paid you. Lovely.
You get paid for this as well. But, you know, jokes aside, it was literally, I was instantly addicted to it. And I just sold the restaurants, nightclubs, anything I had. I just went straight at it. And I was very, very lucky because at the beginning of my career, and you do need a lot of luck in anything, Campbell, you'll back us up. You can be a great footballer. You've got to be at the right place at the right time. I've got a son who is trying to be a pro for years and he didn't make it. So it's the same with the movie business. It's about timing and it's a lot of luck. And I had 5 films in the cinema all at once. And then everyone, you know, Nick Love film, Alex Rackel film, did a Louis Leterrier film. And it just, everyone was like, where did he come from?
Yeah.
Like, who is big, he's powerful, he's this. And then from then it just got kind of roller coasted from there. And it was just by the grace of God, I'm here now. And I'm still as passionate about this industry as I was when I first started in it. I mean that.
Can I just ask you a question? Regarding a couple of your acting roles, I want to talk about the Football Factory, first of all.
Yeah.
What was it like doing it? Did you actually feel like you was a hooligan? Did you actually get into that mindset? And obviously, were all the actors with you football fans? I mean, obviously, I know you are, and you've grown up around Millwall. Yeah. But were they all football fans or were they actors?
Do you want the real story or do you want the...
I want the real story.
The real, only real here.
Of course you fucking do. All right, where do we start? Football Factory, Nick Love, John King. Nick Love was a dear friend of mine and he was sort of climbing through the ranks after he did Goodbye Charlie Bright. And... there was a director there before that completely, I won't say his name, but he knows who he is, completely made a bugs up with the first script. It was kind of a silly little love story. And I think it was me and Frank Harper at the time. We were sort of real good friends. And I just started off, I think that was my second movie. I did The Calcium, but then The Football Factory. Anyway, so Nick Love come on board and knew all the chaps, knew all support himself. Had a vision, had a story for it, wrote a script, everyone fell in love with it and wanted to be in it. And then they came on board with no money. So the football scene where you see that iconic scene, what people love with me and Frank Harper when the kids are playing football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I used to own Greenwich Borough Football Club. So it was most of the stuff shot there because there was no money and what have you. Most of the stuff was shot there. I'm going to get to the point. So... at the end fight scene, that big fight scene at the end, we've turned up. Jacko, who was one of the chaps from back in the day, came on as to authenticate all the fight scenes and stuff like that because he wanted it as authentic as he can, Nick. So we turned up and you've got all the Chelsea mob, right? Powerful, a lot of them. Tony Denham, Frank Harper, Danny Dyer, you know, Neil Maskell, Manukian, they're all there. And then they've got another load of giants behind them. Even some real thugs from real headhunters in there. Icky was in there and a few of the chaps. So we've turned up and we've got like about 7 14-year-olds wearing Burberry caps. And me and Jacko kind of looked at each other, and it was like, Jacko just went, we can't have this. And then, because he's going, well, we can't have this. What are you going to do? So gone over to Nick. Nick went, it's only a film. We went, yeah, for you it might be a rip film, but for me and Tamar, we're getting annihilated. We can't have this.
Yeah, this is serious.
We got no money, right? We got no money. We got no extras. So it's, what are you going to do? So what is the, you know, the honourable thing to do? What any, you know, law-abiding good man would do is call the real thugs.
Oh, my God. This is brilliant.
Wow.
Oh, no, I'm telling you. So the police that were there were real right. They were real right police, and they get spat on and battered and abused day in and day out, especially back then, right?
Yeah.
So we've had a chat with the old Bill, and they've said, listen, we've got batons and guards. I mean, they've come in full gear, full right gear, right? And then I've got on the phone and said, do you not want to be in a film? They said, well, where is it? What's your football franchise? And look, they're all cousins here, you know. Yeah, well, they went. And I said, we're all police here, you know. You have a tear up with them if you want. What, no paperwork, no nickings? I went, no, but, you know, I'm going to warn you. They said, if you go at them, they're going to go at you. If you've been hit by a baton across the back before from a riot policeman on a horse, you know it hurts, mate. You know it, because I've been hit by one, and they fuck it, and I was just walking past, you know what I mean? It was one of them ones, but anyway, so with the boys turned up, a few drinks, a few this, a few that, whatever it is, and then we come through that tunnel. When you rewatch the movie, just have a look at them, because the pep talk I've given, because it's when you've got a load of extras and you're taking them into battle, it's always good to lead them before, get them rolled up, lead them before, and then it'll resonate on whatever, on the camera, whatever's got to resonate. So I just said to him, listen, I said, you know Ricky's with him, you know that, he's in that crowd there. They went, what? Ricky was in that, thought, boy, I went, he's in there, you know. I said, you've got the old Bill, but they're going to go at you. Sweet. I went, ready? Coming in. And the way they come out of that time, if you look at me, I'm being pushed forward. I'm trying to lean back, and they're pushing through me like it was. They nearly picked me up and took me through that tunnel. They were that fucking ready, and they've gone into the old Bill. They've all had their bits, and one of the kids actually got his arm broken. Yeah,
wow.
One of the police broke his arm.
Wow.
Look at the kid. There's a kid on the. If you look at that melee, there's a kid up against the chicken wire fence, and there's a copper leaning down, asking him if he's all right, and he's holding his arm. Snapped his arm in half. So it did messy in there. It did. It wasn't just. And then Nick Love's the most energetic, crazy director you'll ever meet. Because when he calls cut, he's so fired up, he starts running into everyone and starts steaming into them. and then he brings himself back to him because he's only a scrawny little man and probably never had a fight in his life. And he goes, "Look, I'm really sorry. It was just, I just couldn't help myself. I'm sorry." And then I just start laughing and just, you know, let him go because they know he's nuts. You know what I mean? But. The whole thing around it was, I mean, there's another funny story with me and Frank Harper. And I had a bit of age with him. I said, so your dad paid for Millwall. I said, but you got to take, because I'm winding him up all the way through the film. I said, do your fucking lecture. I said, your old man played for Millwall. You had a box at Millwall, and you took the fucking Chelsea, head of the Chelsea headhunters, because it's a bigger role. Now I'm properly rattling him. But I've got him now. So this is the so said, yeah, but you know, no, nah, bollocks, I'm not interested. Should be ashamed of yourself, you fat cunt. I kept saying, right? And then he kept going, don't call me that, shut up, that, don't call you that. So all the way through the film, I mean, like, we ain't even looking at each other in the dinner queue, you know what I mean? Like, who are you looking at, your mum? It was all, we just kept it going all the way through.
Like,
that fight scene at the end,
yeah.
Right? Every time we run at each other, I was all over him, like literally biting into him, right? Nick kept stopping, going, cut, pulling me at once. So, Town, stop it. What do you mean, stop it? Like, what do you want to do? No, he said, we can't make it look like it's half a draw. It's a film. I went, bollocks, I ain't doing it. He's getting it. In the end, I let him roll on top of me, and as he rolls on top of me, I'm saying to him, you fat, see you and to. Do you know what he says to me? Just that line, as it's all doing business with a Turk when you're supposed to be right wing. he sat there and said, I'll give you fucking Gallipoli. He said, listen carefully. Because he really got agged about it. And we just started laughing and moved on. But there you go. That's the football factory story.
Oh, God.
Okay. So that is obviously a brilliant, iconic film that, as a football fan, I don't like violence at all. But I watched it and I could understand, because obviously I grew up with football through 70s and 80s anyway at Highbury. But then swap into something else that the whole world seems obsessed with, and I've not even watched a single episode yet, and my boyfriend is obsessed with Game of Thrones. How did that relate to something like the Football Factory? How did you get into that, and what was it like to film it?
I actually met for Game of Thrones for season one. When I was kind of rising up, people sort of started knowing who I was and what I was doing. And I went in to play head of the Dothraki League, the Maori kid who played the head of the big, sexy, long-haired, what's his name? He just did Aquaman.
Aquaman, yeah.
Jason Momoa.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's where his role. Now, nobody knew anything about it. No scripts, no nothing. Nobody knew the Dothraki languages. There was all under wraps. Hush, hush, hush. So anyway, I went in and read for it, and it didn't happen. And nobody. And then they said, we're not having anybody with a name or no. All unknowns. Sean Bean, obviously. They put him in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I get why they did it, because it was basically they wanted people to understand the characters, not the actor. And that was a genius. So come, I think I've seen it didn't happen. And then I think it was season six. It wasn't a major league. It didn't show big. We did a lot more than what they put on there. So, but anyway, I said, look, I can't be fast. I said, I'm not going to meet. I've done it enough times now. That's it. I said, look, if they're that serious, tell them I'll do it for nothing. So I said, I'm not going to keep what I'm doing now. Anyway, cut a long story short, I went in with that, they offered me gone in, and to be a part of something like that is great, but to learn that Dothraki language, mate, is the most horrendous thing I've ever had to do.
Is it harder than learning Turkish and Greek, Tam?
Mate, let me tell you something. I could learn Turkish and Greek backwards, thrown into Swahili, right, and a little bit of German, and it would have been easier than that Dothraki language. It was horrendous, mate.
Wow.
Plus, they work you to the bone, right? They work you to the bone, all night shoots, hard work, and then on top of that, you've got to learn this Dothraki language, which was horrendous. There was, I think, 5-6 of us, and everyone had a death scene, bar me. Like, they got burnt in the temple, and everyone had their own little death scene, but they didn't give me a death scene, and it was like, my friends go, oh, do you know, they're probably going to be about 7. I went, I ain't doing it. What do you mean? I said, I can't do it. They went, what do you mean? I said, I had fucking 4 pages and it took me a month to learn. How do you think I'm going to get on having a fucking old season? And I'm telling you, listen, I'm up for a challenge anytime. Listen, if you want me to play Whoopi Goldberg, I'll mimic her and play Whoopi Goldberg, right? I'm telling you. Because I've got that about me. But that language, see you later. Oh. There's a Game of Thrones story. And another thing, if you're on Game of Thrones and you're making the tea, you're more famous than Brad Pitt.
Yeah,
that was the amazing thing about it. I flew to Turkey, I had a shit and a shave in it. You could not believe the amount of press. And it was Game of Thrones, yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
I was in EastEnders as well, wasn't it? But honestly, it was like a nothing thing. That's what made me believe how the show was. But even if Spielberg or Davey or my idols, they were doing that episode, I'd have to say no.
Yeah.
Because I'd be shit. You
know what, Tam? It's I worked with Sophie Turner on a movie called Barely Lethal, and that cast is probably one of the hardest working casts on television. Making that show is so hard, and what you're saying right now is like 100% true. And like when you think about the regular cast members doing that week in, week out, it is pretty amazing. So before Kev,
and the girl who plays
Khaleesi,
the Dragon Princess.
Yeah, Khaleesi.
Khaleesi. Yeah. Emma, what's her name?
No. Emma, what? Oh my God, I'm having a brain fart.
Not Watson. I know, I've got to start with that.
No, no.
Emily.
Emily, oh my gosh. Okay, keep talking and I'll get you her name.
Anyway, see her, mate. She was different class. Like, brrr, just rolled off her tongue.
Amelia Clark, of course.
Beautiful girl, one of your own, stunning. She's got everything about and deserves every bit of her success, right? But she did this language, she did this monologue in Dothraki, and I was just mesmerized watching her. And at the end of it, I said, how'd you get on with her? I mean, I got it, don't get me wrong, I got it, but it was so hard to get. And the thing is with that language, the fans are so avid. You say one word wrong, they'll ruin it.
Oh, that's the choice. They'll crucify you.
It's like trying to play the Joker. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's impossible. No, after Jack Nicholson, no one can do it.
No. Well, after Heath Ledger now on the Joker, and you've had your druthers in Batman Begins as well, but. Before I turn it over to Kev on football, real quick, a film I actually worked on when I was head of press at Columbia Pictures and loved working on it. Guy Ritchie and Matthew Vaughn produced it. Brad Pitt starred in it. Snatch, which has now become a big hit for Crackle. And you are starring with Dougray Scott, who I love and adore. Great actor.
My brother Dougray.
Rupert Grint, who's grown up so much from Harry Potter. Real quick, in a nutshell, tell us about... you're looking tough there, tough life there, Tam, living in Spain for 3 months recording with not only these great actors, but also a new slew of British talent that you look like you're having a lot of fun with.
I didn't know where it all went wrong.
Where did it all go wrong?
Listen, that show was a blessing. It was a godsend. Season one, Alex Dukakis, who's a dear friend of mine, who's a showrunner, creator, and writer, he did Dead Man Running and The Calcium.
Mm.
He got approached by it. He was up and down. He didn't know whether he wanted to do it or not. So he ended up doing it. And the first season was tough because he was writing as he was going along. And we was kind of creating our characters as we went along. It was shot in beautiful Manchester, which I love and adore. I've got a little affiliation to that place. First one was good. It became number one show on Crackle. So they commissioned season two, which was even better. They took the whole crew to Spain. The great about this is that normally sometimes you get a bad egg in the car. So everyone was amazing. Everyone was brilliant. Dougray's become a brother. Ginger Potter, I call him, bless him, little Rupert. I love him dearly. You know, he's become like a nephew and a brother. But the whole family there was brilliant. And the snatch that they created was good because he said, I don't want to have anyone. He took a chance and said, I don't want anyone from the original in the new one. It's the same story, same beat, same everything. And he took that chance and it worked for him. So what this snatch is basically is a modern day snatch for a younger audience. And it was a great job to work on.
Brilliant, Tamer. Tamer, let's get back to a little bit of football because you know what? We could listen to you forever talking about
bless
your
you.
Career because I think you've had a fantastic career.
Thank you.
Obviously, we're Arsenal. You're Millwall, but we're going to touch on the second team, Chelsea. Who do you reckon is going to finish fourth? Get that fourth spot. Do you reckon Chelsea or Arsenal?
Do you know what? I've got to be honest. They've been shit, Chelsea, lately, haven't they?
Yes. And Hazard's overrated. There, I said it.
No, he ain't. No, he ain't.
He's
not
overrated.
Yes, he is.
No.
Oh,
he's
God.
Not.
I'm not going to have that. So be careful where you say that. I mean, you've got to edit that bit out.
No, she can't edit that out. That's what she believes. I don't believe
I'll tell you
overrated.
What, though.
Especially
you know
when he plays a number nine role.
Supporters? Do you know what I love about Arsenal supporters?
Tell me, babe.
When you're with them, they're with you. Legend or no legend, you leave Arsenal, you're finished. It's over.
No, Tamer, that's not true. It's how you leave Arsenal. If you leave
like Ashley,
in the way
Ashley.
Yeah, exactly. If you leave like Ashley did or Van Persie did or some others did, then you're going to you're going to be hated, Tamar.
Yeah, I left.
No, come on, Sanya left, and we love him. So, and Jack, it's the way you leave a club.
Adebayor, Nasri, RVP. They didn't leave well.
Yeah, but Adebayor was bang out of order, weren't he?
Exactly. So, bang as long as Cashley Cole. But at the end of the day, you've got to leave.
Listen, I said, I know Ashley really well. And to his defence, mate, it got to the point where he said to me, he said, nobody was even speaking English to it. He said, everybody had segregated themselves in corners and had their own little groups, like the French and this, that. And he went, it ended up like I was sitting with people that couldn't even speak English. He was miserable there.
I don't know if he was miserable there, but he left for $5,000 more because he was promised $5,000.
Did he do well for the club?
He did brilliant. Yeah, he did brilliant.
Don't get me wrong,
He's not up there with Wrighty, with his accolades. No, he's not up there with Wrighty.
Not in a million years.
Wrighty's a Millwall supporter. He plays for me at Grinney's Borough. So you need to thank me for Wrighty. We was the one that put him to Pally.
You helped develop him, Tabba.
I helped him. He was under me as a kid, you know what I mean?
Let me go back to that point, Tamar. You cannot compare Ashley Cole and Ian Wright, not to me, that's for sure.
But hold on a second.
Listen, there is no comparison with Wright. Wright is a dear friend of mine, and he is king of kings, without a doubt. But what I'm saying is he did do good for the club, and he came through the ranks, and he was
Very well, brilliant player, can't fault it. Devastating when he left, but how he left and what he did in his book.
Yeah, you've got a point.
Very nice.
Look at what Lampard did with Chelsea.
Yeah, but
I bet you
Lampard will manage Chelsea one day with Terry. But the way he left.
Yeah, but when he came to America, because I covered him here and I interviewed him when he was playing for NYFC, and the problem for Frank was that he came over injured. Same thing with Gerrard, they came over injured. So that wasn't a really good thing. But Frank also left because I believe the...
I love Frank, he's a mate.
No, I know. Yeah, but Mourinho screwed up his swan song, didn't he, really? But
what I'm saying to you is what Lamps did. You know what people? If he come back, we're still welcoming him back. If Ashley Cole's going to be the manager of Arsenal, it wouldn't be good for him, would it?
No, he wouldn't be welcome back. Not one bit. He'd be as welcome back as Robin van Persie and Nasri put together. To be honest, all of them.
Oh, somebody's bitter. I'm going to stop there.
Right, let's have a little bit of fun with Tamar before we get him out of here. And you are listening to the Highbury.
I think Chelsea's going to finish above Arsenal.
And is that because of your manager, right? Is it because of his inability, a little bit like ours, to adapt his tactics?
What is that player you like at Chelsea?
Eden Hazard. Is that the guy you're thinking?
He's going to take them to where they need to be, not the manager.
Oh, not Giroud.
Next question, please.
I thought Giroud would take them where they needed to be.
Sophie doesn't like creative players. Hazard, Ozil, she don't like either of them.
That's not true. Here's the scoop. When Hazard is playing in his natural position...
Sophie, park the bus up, girl, then. Park the bus up, one tap. Everyone back to two taps, park the bus up.
Listen.
Put the goalkeeper up front.
I don't like to park the bus, don't you? Come on. I love watching Hazard when he's playing in his natural position. I feel like he's been set up to fail and I'm playing in that forward role because he's not as explosive. And I think that players like him are set up to fail. And therefore, for me, when I see a footballer can play in any position, I believe that. And I just don't think that he's consistent enough. But anyway, we're not going to talk about Hazard, right? Because... let's ask you this question real quick before we get you to the quick fire round and get you out of here. Liverpool versus Man City. Do you feel like a lot of other fans out there who really do not want Liverpool to win the title?
No, not at all.
Oh my God.
I have, for some reason growing up, and I've always said it, I've always, for some reason, and I've never been a mad football man of knowledge, even though we've had the clubs and stuff, but when I was growing up, but I've always had a love for Liverpool, you know, even through the tragedies and stuff. I don't know what it is, whether it's their players or the glamour when I was growing up. I've always had a little bit of love for the Scousers. So I want them to win. I would love to see them do it.
I'm a bit with you, Tamer. I grew up respecting Liverpool. Yeah,
Gerard, I'm a fan of Gerard's. Sorry, darling, go on, I'm talking
about
you.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm one of few Arsenal fans that want that wouldn't mind Liverpool winning. I don't care if it's City or Liverpool. I don't have an issue. So many Arsenal fans do not want Liverpool to win.
They really don't.
Kev.
I'll take Liverpool over all of them, mate.
Like Klopp, and I like their
sacrilege.
Exactly.
But they've got a good buzz going on down there. They love Klopp, don't they? They're having a lot of fun. Yeah. They're enjoying themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it just seems like they're having a good time and they're all getting on, which we don't see in a lot of clubs nowadays. Always very a problem. True. The more money they've got, the more problems they've got.
I don't know, actually, down there.
They've still got that Sunday football feel to them, haven't they? Where they're all getting on and they're all in love. And it's just great. You know, you get that feel from it.
Let me get this straight, Mr. Tamer Hassan. You go to see Chelsea and you are lauding the Liverpool right now. Listen to you. No, he watches it. He watches Chelsea. He watches it. All right.
You asked me a question.
In front of Kev.
To win the league, and I'm telling you why I have an affiliation to the Scousers.
And you're saying that in front of one of Everton's greatest goal scorers, and I mean, seriously, it's a sacrilegious. Kev, jump in, you tell him. Go on, Kev.
Yeah, I'm a football widow, I'm sorry.
Tam, look, Liverpool do have it going on. Everyone agrees with that.
Am I right in saying that they've got it? They're happy down there, you know, and I'm no pundit or no manager.
No, you're right. They have got something going there. But I think the issue with a lot of fans are they are quick to push it in your face. Yeah. Quick to push it in your face. So,
well, they've got nothing else, have they? Bless them.
Get cocky. You want them to fail, don't you?
Okay.
Yeah, but that's what we do. We set them up for themselves. Can we talk about the baby face assassin managing Man United?
No, what about rather him? Not.
What has he got? That not go? Do you think they're giving the job?
Nope.
No.
Or they giving them the job?
Nope. Pochettino. Pochettino's taking that job.
I don't think he is, but I don't believe it. Solskjaer will be there.
They should be ashamed of themselves if they don't give it to him. They should be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, guys. But
they were humiliated against PSG.
Anyone would have succeeded after Mourinho. Anyone, because it was so toxic that I could have got in there and done a better job than Mourinho.
Go on, PG.
Just going back to something.
I wish I knew you when I had Greenwich Borough.
I was probably at Highbury screaming at Kevin because he was a bit... something like that.
Oh, thanks.
But hang on, one of your greats took Millwall to the first division. How about that?
That's right.
Who's one of our guys?
Sure did.
Oh, George? Yeah.
Sure
we've got a bit of affiliation with South East London, obviously. One last thing before Soph jumps in. If Millwall will ever play Arsenal at the Emirates, can you come and sit with me, yeah?
If Millwall, listen, there's a funny story there, you know.
Oh.
I went down there before. I think we drew him in a couple of years ago and I got battered down there.
We did.
You, know, the old Highbury, right?
Yeah.
There, I've got to tell you, we got tickets. We only could get tickets for the, I was only young. And I'm standing there, I fucking lost myself, didn't I? And so they did this call. I went, yeah, and everyone just looked at me. And I was at the top. Who the fuck do you think I am? And I knew it was coming anyway. I might as well take it with dignity. I ended up on the pitch, right? I don't know how I got down there, but I ended up on the pitch. The stewards have got me. They've thrown me out the door. I'll tell you what, mate. Highbury is scary and lonely when you're a Millwall supporter.
Was it at night? Games going.
Oh, mate, them little streets. I was running for fucking... I was running.
Oh, around Highbury. There's hundreds of streets.
I was never so scared in my entire life, mate, because you get out of that Highbury, don't you? And you know, there's such a tight-knit community. They're like, it's like a gypsy site, isn't it? It's like everyone just watching that. It's like a ghost town. You come out when that game's on. There was no one on the streets, was there? You just get out and you're like, oh, no. You know, we're scared as kids to fuck enter out of Savile Park, let alone go to Highbury. You know what I mean?
Hammer, I remember that game because I always used to stand outside the Marble Halls opposite and we used to chat to everyone. And when Millwall turned up, the air went like you could cut it with a knife.
It was horrible, mate. It was horrible.
It was awful. And we didn't really experience.
I remember as I got down onto the pitch, and there was all police around me. I got me. I started going, "You wankers, coming in!" All leery when all the police around me. But I've got to tell you, when I was in there, mate, it was terrifying. And then the police threw me out the door, and that was it. I was on my own again. I was like,
"Oh no!"
I think I beat a world record of running back to South East London. I've got to tell you.
Oh my goodness! Absolutely fantastic. Right, we are going to get Tamer out on the quick fire round. I'm going to bust through these questions, and you are just going to answer them in like 3 second sound bites. All right, Tam, are you ready?
Go on in.
All right. I used to have a bell, but Kevin and Amanda hate it, so I stopped using it. You know, I should have a bouzouki or something. You know, like a little intro right here. All right, here we go, babe.
Yeah.
Danny Dyer. The first five are with people you know or you've worked with. Right, here we go. Danny Dyer or Daniel Craig? Who's winning the fight?
Craig.
Khaleesi or Cersei? Who'd you rather?
Khaleesi.
50 Cent or Jay-Z? Who's the better rapper?
50.
EastEnders.
50 all day, my boy.
EastEnders or Coronation Street? What's the better soap?
EastEnders.
John Terry or Frank Lampard? Who'll be the better manager?
Lamps.
Liverpool or City, who's winning the title?
Liverpool.
The team you loathe the most?
Fenerbahce.
Yes!
Did you see, I didn't say no one in the UK. That's a smart answer.
You're so clever. I love it. All right. Maradona's individual goal versus England in 86 or Brazil's Carlos Alberto team goal in 1970?
Maradona all day, hands down, best player ever created.
All right. You can thank me later. I'm giving you $300 million to spend and you can only buy one, Messi or Ronaldo?
Ronaldo.
Now, think hard on this last one. Gianfranco Zola or Bergkamp, who was the better player in the Premier League?
Fuck.
Be honest.
Bergkamp.
Yes, because there's only one.
Listen, if you want me to tell you honestly, I mean, listen, he had twinkle toes, didn't he, Zola? But he didn't have the first time round the corner, did he?
No, he did not. Right, you have been probably the most epic guest we've had. Tomorrow you play Manchester United as well. You fancy the game tomorrow night? And you're going to Chelsea, your second team? You're going to go watch that?
Well, listen, let me tell you something, right? Kev backed me up on this, right? Teams, it's not... I'd rather play a team having a winning streak than a team that's had a losing streak. Right,
yeah.
Kev?
Yeah.
Right, so they've got to come out guns blazing. It's going to be a good match. They've got to win. That's it. They've got to win. They've got to win.
Amazing.
They've got to win for themselves, for the club and everything, and the fans. They've got to win. So, Man City, be careful. Up your game, because they're coming at you.
All right, lovely.
Hey, and Tamer, one more thing. How about Millwall getting through in the FA Cup again?
Ooh.
Listen, we always get a day out, don't we? That's why I love that stuff. We get a day out, right? We're happy for a day out. Do you know what I mean? It's like Del Boy used to say, didn't he? Yeah. And when he used to say... And when he was like, no chance, and Millwall going to win the cup, yeah? Like, you know what I mean? But we've got great fans, we've got a great club, and we love a day out. So, absolutely. Playoffs, semi-finals, quarter-finals, it's beautiful for us.
Lovely stuff. And if only you and Tottenham could both lose on the 27th of February, life will be grand. Mr. Tamer Hassan, thank you so much. You can follow Tamer, Real Tamer Hassan, at Twitter, on Instagram. We're going to be sharing the pod and all of Tamer's fans will be able to listen to it as well. Amanda and Kev, how about I let you do the lauding? Without doubt, one of Highbury Squad's best ever guests, no? Come on.
Incredible.
Oh, brilliant. Incredible, oh, you've made... Yeah. He's made us laugh for nearly an hour. And I'm going to come and find you on Twitter, Mr. Hassan.
I've probably talked you to death. But, Kev, listen, always been a big fan, my man. You've always been a legend in my eyes. So keep doing your thing, buddy.
Nice one, man. I'm sure we'll link up very soon at some stage.
Sooner the better. And, Sophie, I love you.
You're love you, bro. Yes, babe. I love you. Right, thanks, man.
Thank you for coming on.
Thanks. Thanks, Sam.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Thanks.
Brilliant. Bye-bye. We'll have you back.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. What? I'm exhausted. I need a drink. He is... we need to go to the pub with Tamer, Kev, Amanda, and
mimosas.
Just, mimosas. Is it
mimosas?
Mimosas. All
no.
Way.
No. And no.
We might need vodka shots. Oh, brilliant stuff. Okay. Now, here's what I've been waiting to talk to you guys about. Let's just cut to the chase. Mesut Ozil, the Instagram, Twitter posts, all of the above, his war with Emery. Amanda, just take it away and let's me, you and Kev dissect this. A lot of fans out there, I know Ask Blogger said a few things, a few other key informers in the Arsenal universe have said a few things. It's like half the fan base versus the other half. Again, here we go. Amanda, what are your thoughts?
I just feel that no one knows actually what's going on here. But this reminds me of the Wenger in, Wenger out situation last year on social media. Now we're having whether you think Ozil should be playing or not, or should be shutting up or not. I don't know what's going on. Obviously, he's not wanted. There's number one. Suppose number two, they want him out in the summer. And if that's the case, I'm not happy about it because everyone knows how I feel about Ozil. I don't feel he's been given a chance this season at all. But if that's the case, fine, then Arsenal come first and no player is bigger than the club. But the dross we've got at the moment, don't tell me he's not better and he shouldn't be playing. If he's fit, he should be in that team. We are not playing well and we're missing massive creativity. So put him on the pitch. Put Ramsey on the pitch. Ramsey's going. Put him on the pitch and let him play. We will get more money for Ozil than we would at the moment if he's never going to play till, if we've seen his last game. I don't understand. He doesn't fit into the manager's way. Then we have to move on. But just play him. We're not winning games, are we?
Kev, I mean, Amanda has some really good points. It's kind of like we understand where Ozil's gone wrong in his Arsenal career. We know he hasn't performed in really big games. I know you and Amanda differ a little bit on the opinion with Ozil. What are your thoughts, Kev, on what's transpired over the last week?
I just think it's a sorry situation. Ozil was probably feeling hurt because he wants to be at the club, doesn't he? He's come out saying he loves the club, etc. But the problem is the past regime loves Mesut Ozil. The new regime, Emery gave him a chance at the start of the season. Seeing the way he plays, said he needs to work harder, needs more out of him. Unai Emery doesn't feel he's getting enough out of him. And it's got to the point now where January really showed the hand of Arsenal. Couldn't sign anyone outright, only could bring loans in. So that forces Emery's hand. So what he's got to do, he knows he's got to start manipulating and moving the wage bill. The biggest earner is Mesut Ozil. He's not his type of player. We know that. So now we're starting to see the cull of Mesut Ozil. There's times where, is he ill? Is he not? Is he got an injury? Apparently he's had flu. You know, does he just come straight back in? No, he doesn't. Obviously, he's got to prove himself on the training pitch. But Unai Emery, I believe, has moved on from Mesut Ozil. Whether there's going to be people who like it and there's going to be people who don't like it. I get that. But the fact of the matter is, you have to back the manager. The manager is the man who's going to make these tough decisions. And Mesut Ozil's Arsenal career is over. I know he doesn't want to go, but they're going to force him out, even if they have to pay him up. So I don't think it's about actually what they can get from Mesut Ozil in the summer. I don't think it is. I think it's just about Unai Emery moving on from him.
Okay, so totally get that and totally understand where you're coming from. And I guess for me, some of it is really hard to believe that we're talking about the same player who won the World Cup with Germany, who is Germany's best player year in, year out, who Ronaldo loved playing with the most at Real Madrid. I find it hard to believe that Mesut Ozil has has become a bad player overnight. Perhaps he's lost his confidence a little bit at Arsenal because of the expectations put upon him. Let me ask you this, Amanda. We saw, and I'm not saying Emery's Mourinho, because Mourinho is on his own mountain of wankerism, right? He's a not a very nice person. He treated his players awfully, and we're seeing the effect since he's left in terms of how Ole's been able to inspire that team again. But I'm likening this a little bit to Pogba being the biggest character and player and highest signing at United versus Mourinho. Do you see a situation where if Emery was the man, would they have backed him somehow a little bit more in January? Amanda, what are your thoughts on, is this a Pogba Mourinho situation in a different way, and will Ozil win out in the end?
It's interesting, actually, because Wenger came out and said something, didn't he, about Ozil, saying he needs to be loved and supported. Some players do. Kev will probably have worked with some that do and some that don't. Everyone works different. It's human nature, isn't it? Humans are very different in the way they need to progress and be supported. We don't know. Does he need an arm around his shoulder? Maybe. Emery does look like that type. He doesn't look like a sergeant major. There's obviously more to this than we know. The wage bill, his wages, I don't know. But at the end of the day, Gazidis and Wenger have got a lot to answer for. They gave him the contract. So on these extortionate wages. So I don't know what is actually going on. All I know is I look at what I see on the pitch. We need him on the pitch. So is it like Pogba? Look what's happened to Pogba since Solskjaer's come in. But look at after United team, exactly. To be fair. To be fair, that as well. Will he win out in the end? No way. No, he won't. I'm sorry, Arsenal will win out. And he'll either saunter off on loan somewhere or be sold. I'm not happy about it. It's not what I want. But as I said, the fan base is definitely split.
Okay, so for me personally, I feel like I think, wow, Pogba was deemed a bust. And now he's like the talisman of United again. Some players like Xhaka and others have come out in support of Ozil. Kev, you're a player. Let's get into your player mind here. He sends the tweet. He sends the Instagram post out. Is it, and Amanda, you chime in on this too. Well, you haven't answered my question yet, guys. Fair or foul on his public statement? Is that not the guy who's been silent for so long? He's been embarrassed no matter how he's performed. Just like Mourinho embarrassed Pogba, Emery's doing it in a passive-aggressive way. Mourinho just comes out and shit-talks Pogba in front of the camera. Emery is doing it behind the camera. What is the difference, you guys? He's shown Ozil zero respect. Are you telling me there are better players than him at the club that can help us? And Ozil, I don't blame him for coming out like that because he's desperate. He loves living in London. What is the problem with his tweet? What is the problem with his Instagram post, Kev? You tell me.
There's not a problem with it. It's just that, obviously, he's a very popular player at the football club. He's got the fan base do love Mesut Ozil because he has unbelievable quality on his day. The issue is there's obviously a struggle within the club now to try and get him out. So, or what he puts on about loving the club and, you know, knowing it's the right place and all that kind of thing. It's not about trophies or history and all that kind of thing. All that does is go against the hierarchy at Arsenal. So that's the battle. And unfortunately, Mesut Ozil, he could sit tight and not play, but eventually that is going to get the backup of a lot of Arsenal fans because what that will do is just say he doesn't even want to play football anymore. He's just going to sit there and take the money when we could be using that money to get better players in. That's what this is about. Emery needs to move him out in order to free up that wage bill, to be able to recruit in the summer. That is very vital for Unai Emery. And I'm not saying he's the only player because Petacek's going and Ramsey's going and, you know, there's a few players going. But what that's going to allow Unai Emery to do is recruit properly. We've been pulling our hair out all season about our defence and we need this. needs to get addressed in the summer, and he has to make the room on the wage bill in order to fill those gaps. He really does. So I could understand what Mesut Ozil was doing because he doesn't want to go. But unfortunately, Unai Emery's had 6 months or 6 months now to check him out to see if he's that type of leader. He made him a captain and all that, but he's not, unfortunately. He's not that guy. He's
why does he continue
guy.
To continue to pick him then, Kev, as captain? That's not right. In games where he's told him, he's already told him he's useless, and then he picks him as captain. How misleading. And so is Emery. You believe in Emery. You think Emery, give Emery all the power and the tools and the resources to move forward. You believe this is our coach of the future?
100%. 100%. He's the manager. He's the coach. He's the man making the decisions. Now, if Mesut Ozil was the Mesut Ozil that was winning World Cups, there wouldn't be a problem. But he's not, unfortunately.
His confidence has gone, right, mate? I mean, his confidence is shot.
Look, we could say whether it's confidence or not, everybody started in the same position at the start of the season. Everyone, all the players. Emery came in, didn't know anybody, hadn't worked with them. He worked with them all this season so far. And Mesut Ozil's the one that keeps on missing out. So something's going on there. And something's happening that Emery doesn't like.
So let me ask you this, Kev, before I turn it to PG. What are your thoughts on everything everyone's saying about how defensively he's playing? And how, you know, in some people's opinions, in some ways, he's played seven at the back or five at the back, and he's not picking any creative players. As a striker, how frustrated right now could Aubameyang and Lacazette be? Talk us through that a little bit.
I don't agree with that. He's playing seven at the back and all that nonsense. That's nonsense. Look, the team we knew this season weren't going to be a bed of roses. Arsenal went on a 22-game unbeaten run, was fantastic. They're not going to carry that on. We're going through a bit of a tough patch. It's going to happen during the season. It is going to happen. Can't play well all the time. People are out there criticising, and the fact that Mesut Ozil's not playing, oh, we lack creativity, we lack this, we lack that. We're still scoring goals. I think we've scored four less than Liverpool, four or five less than Liverpool. That says something, doesn't it? So, look, it's easy to point the finger and say, he's not doing this, he's not doing that. Of course, Unai Emery's made some mistakes. Which manager don't make mistakes? Mm-hmm. But I just think the team, we've suffered some horrendous injuries. And we've suffered because we haven't been able to play a settled team.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of unrest, the players are leaving and this, that, the other. So it's still unbalanced squad. We need more balance in the squad. And the only way that's going to get addressed is in the summer. We're going to go on hopefully the next few games, we're going to have a few games where, you know, they're winnable games. So, you know, let's back the manager. It's not just back the manager for 6 months. We've got to back him for the whole season. Let's get to the summer, dust ourselves down and see what moving and shaking they do. Because I believe, after 1 year of being in the Premier League, Unai Emery's going to know a lot more what he needs.
I think that's a fair statement, Amanda. I mean, I spoke to Pep Guardiola after his first year in the Premier League and his first ever season in being a manager where he never won a trophy. And he found the Premier League a lot tougher than he thought. I thought he was going to come in and just boss it like he's done everywhere else he's gone. But I actually believe that he was brought down a peg or two, and he realized just how tough it is. So what Kev is saying there is kind of, it could be true in that, you know, Unai in his second season sees things a little bit differently. And I think that, you know, he's treated a bit differently perhaps because it's Arsenal. So if it was that way for Pep, why can't it be that way for Unai? You know?
We'll have to wait and see how it all plays out.
Get us out of here.
I'm very happy with Emery at the moment. We just have to move on, you know, and see what happens in the next few transfer windows. People need to calm down a little bit. We're still only a point off fourth. Okay. That's what we need to remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is all true. All right. Let's get you guys out of here. We have our second leg against Batty coming up. Amanda, are you going?
Yes, unfortunately. I'll be there Thursday night. Although
go
I do
on,
think,
Amanda.
I think we'll, win 2-1.
Really? I think, yeah. Kev, what do you say? What's your football?
You think we'll win 2-1, so we're going out?
No, why would we go out?
Yeah, because
oh,
they're away
3-1.
Go.
No, 3-1. Sorry.
All right. Bloody hell, Amanda. Flipping heck.
No, 3-1. 2-1's my next prediction, but carry on.
Super Kev, what do you think about? Are we going to batter Bate?
Yeah, we're gonna sort them right out. Look, the pitch didn't help. We could have been out of sight after 20 minutes. Let's be honest. We didn't have our shooting boots on and the performance got worse. We're gonna deal with them at home. I'd say 4-1.
Oh, Super Kev, that's my prediction too. 4-1. I think we're going to batter them and then everything will go back to being rosy.
We're not going to batter anybody.
Hold on. We're going to batter Bate and then we're going to move into the weekend, PG, where we meet Southampton on Sunday. Not the best team for us to play against, let's face it. What's your prediction? What happened?
Amanda?
Did we lose her? Stop making out.
I'm not making out. I couldn't hear you. Cut out. What prediction for what, darling?
Southampton.
Southampton on Sunday.
Oh, next Sunday.
Yeah.
Southampton will win 2-1. That was my prediction. That's why I said it for bait. Sorry.
Yeah, fine. Super Kev, what's your prediction?
I'm going 3-1.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-2. I don't think we're going to beat them. I think that's just one of those teams that we struggle against too. So those are our predictions. Highbury squad listeners, do not say we did not deliver this week. I mean, talk about a football mezzer. Thank you to Mr. Tamer Hassan for coming on. Again, you can find Tamer at Real Tamer Hassan. You can find us at Highbury Squad. You can find Kev at One Kevin Campbell. You can find our little Princess Guna at Princess Guna 1969. And me at Soccer Diva. Thank God the football's coming back. An epic show. Super Kev, Amanda, well done. Nice job. Give yourselves a round of applause.
And thanks to you too, Sophie.
Yes.
Thanks, my love.
Thanks to you. It's lovely to be back.
All right. Yes. And we leave you with this thought, no matter what's going on our club, remember, Amanda, tell them.
It's always Arsenal.